Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
You're listening to Luke's English Podcast. For more information, visit teacherluke.co.uk. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Luke's English Podcast. In this episode, I'm going to explore the notion of Britishness, including the stereotypes, the reality, and the complexity of defining Britishness, or in fact, any other national identity. You'll find that a lot of what I'm saying is transcribed on the page for this episode on teacherluke.co.uk, although not all of it has been prepared in advance, and there will be some moments when I go off script and improvise. So this episode is a mix of scripted and unscripted bits. This might be a long episode because Britishness is a big subject. I have no idea how long the episode is going to be at this stage. And if it is really, really long, then I will divide it into several episodes. And then you'll just get even more for your money, which is quite a lot considering it's a free podcast. So Britishness, that's the topic. That's what we're going to be looking at in this episode. So I'm British, right? I'm British, so I suppose I must be some kind of 19th century cross between a gentleman and a hooligan, with a newspaper and an umbrella under my arm, a cup of milky tea in one hand, a pint of warm beer in the other, eating a bag of fish and chips, while talking in Shakespearean English about the benefits of the rules of cricket and the class system, before getting blind drunk at a football match, invading a bunch of developing countries, and then sort of apologising a bit like Hugh Grant. Because basically we're just a bloody nice bunch of chaps who mean no harm and live in a kind of antique world of Downton Abbey where we all just keep calm and carry on while being awfully polite and well-mannered, except, of course, when we're playing Germany or France at football, when we all forget our national anthem before transforming into a gang of brutal thugs who then smash up the local town and blame it on illegal immigrants while we continue to eat our bad food under our bad weather using our bad teeth the whole time making bad jokes in accents that nobody can understand before stopping everything in order to camp outside a hospital to await the birth of some blue-blooded, bawling British baby who, if he's lucky enough to make it to 100 years old, he'll probably put on a magic golden hat in a massive old castle in order to become our unelected and powerless king, like some kind of twisted modern real-life version of Game of Thrones in 3D. Yes, I'm from Britain. In fact, I'm from London, which, as you probably know, is in England, which is in Britain, which is in the UK, which is in Europe, sort of. It's not really in Europe, it's near Europe, it's next to Europe. It is connected to Europe, of course, by treaties and by a tunnel, which goes under the water. In fact, there's a door at their end in Britain, and they reserve the right to just close that door whenever they want. In fact, I think they lock it at night and at the weekend, as if to say, thanks, Europe, thanks a lot for the cheese, it was very nice. We'll see you on Monday. In fact, it's a bank holiday weekend, so we'll catch up with you guys on Tuesday. So not really in Europe, Britain. It's in the sea, isn't it? Because it's an island. Yes, it's an island. It's not Ireland. No, that's a different country. That's an independent country. That is an island too, and it's also called Ireland, just with different spelling. Pronunciation's the same. But Ireland's not in Britain. No, don't make that mistake. And it's not in the UK either. No, except for Northern Ireland. That's not an island because it's actually in Ireland, although it's not part of Ireland. It's actually part of Britain, although it's not in Britain. Mm-hmm. But it is in the UK. Northern Ireland is definitely in the UK. The UK, that stands for the United Kingdom. Kingdom because apparently we are united by a king. Technically, it's a queen, but let's not let that bother us too much. So United Queen, we could call it the United Queendom, change the name, but that probably wouldn't be very popular. We could call it the UQ, which is appropriate because we do queue. We love queuing and we're very good at it. We may be the best in the world at queuing, although I think maybe the Japanese, they actually may be the international champions at queuing. And obviously there may be some other competitors out there too, but I think probably the Japanese are the top competitors when it comes to queuing. Although saying that, they do require markings on the ground, on the station platform. So I think in a freestyle event, the Brits would win every time. So there you go. That's just a little introduction there about being British. So what is all this about, you might be asking yourself? What's going on, Luke? Why are you repeating bits of your stand-up routine? Well, I just thought it would be appropriate because this episode is all about defining Britishness, or at least attempting to do that. For a bit of context, recently in some of my English classes, we've been studying topics related to the UK, such as the political system, the monarchy, the relationship between the UK and Europe, and stuff like that. In our first lesson, we considered the idea of Britishness, national identity, and the citizenship test, just as a sort of introduction to the UK in general. What is Britishness, and what do you understand by the expression Britishness? So as a warm-up exercise in some of my classes, I invited my students to try and define the term Britishness, to try and brainstorm in pairs just some ideas and things they associate with the idea of Britishness. And the results were the usual mix of stereotypes, some stereotypes, and some kind of genuine insight. And I found it particularly interesting to see the difference between how my students see my country from an outsider's point of view and how I see it from the inside. Okay, so it's interesting to look at the idea of Britishness, either defined by people abroad when they look at the UK from abroad, or how the people in the UK define their own national identity as well. And in fact, really just looking at the question of how do you define a national identity? And we'll be using Britain as an example. And obviously, this is Luke's English podcast. And, I'm from the UK, so I have an interest, I have a particular interest in this, and hopefully you do too. Of course, I'm always interested in your comments and things like that, and I'm also interested in just any reflections that you have, not just about Britishness, but about, for example, your national identity, stereotypes about your countries, and the realities about your countries too, or about how you see Britain from your position. Leave your comments, teacherluke.co.uk. This one is going to be called, I think it's going to be called What is Britishness? What is Britishness? So Britishness is hard to define, just like any national identity, really. In fact, it seems that defining Britishness is harder than you might expect. In fact, the more you think about it, the more complex it becomes. And you end up dealing with, questions of politics and power and immigration and history and geography and so many things. And it's remarkably hard to put your finger on a universally true definition of Britishness. Instead, you end up with the usual stereotypes, either held by foreigners who have their own view of the UK, or by British people themselves, who for one reason or another define their culture with certain reference points. For example, it's fish and chips, or it's a cup of tea and a game of cricket on the TV, or whatever. But I want to try and go a bit deeper than the usual lists of associations. Although we will look at those lists of associations, I'd like to try and go a bit deeper and explore the subject in some depth. So that's what I would like to do in this episode. I'd like to cover that in this episode. Britishness, what is it? What is it not? I might not be a social historian, but I might not have all of the answers. But nevertheless, let's get stuck into this topic and see what we can come up with. Essentially, in this episode, I'm going to talk about British images in order to give you a broader understanding of the topic beyond just the usual stereotypes. And I'm trying to sort of bridge the gap between what foreigners understand to be British and what British people understand to be British, in order to just try and, I'm just trying to make the world a better place. I mean, I'm just trying to bring those two things together so that I'm just trying to create a bit of understanding, man. Anyway, no need to be sort of embarrassing about it. Is there, Luke? No. Let's keep a stiff upper lip about it. No need to make a fool of yourself. Although I think making a fool of yourself is quite a British thing. We do like to sort of make fun of ourselves. And remember that Brits do like to make fun of themselves. And sometimes I might act like I'm being all arrogant. I'm not really. It's just a sort of, I don't know how to explain it. It's a joke, I suppose. So I'm just pretending to be a lot more arrogant than I really am. Or am I? I don't know sometimes. The question of humour and the importance of humour in British culture is a big thing. We'll come on to that in a bit. To prepare for this episode, I have written myself some notes and I've scripted some parts. So some of it's scripted, blah, 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 blah. You will be able to read some of this stuff on the website if you want to. I'll also add this episode to the transcript collaboration page so that if you want to transcribe the stuff that's not already transcribed, you can. So please feel free to add comments under this episode to work on transcribing this episode. On the subject of the transcript collaboration, can I just say at this point, thank you very much for those of you who have been working on transcriptions. It's brilliant. And I don't know, when was it that I launched the transcript collaboration? It must have been about a year ago, I think. I could check it out on my website, but I can't be bothered. And it's not necessary. But the thing is, I started the transcript collaboration page about a year ago. And it's a big success, I think. If you look at teacherluke.co.uk and check out the transcript collaboration page, you will see lists of transcripts that have been finished or transcripts which are being worked on right now. The list of finished transcripts is really big. It's really long now. People, you've been doing good work. Thank you. You know who you are. Thank you very much. If you haven't checked it out, go and check out the transcript collaboration. See all the stuff that's been done. A lot of the episodes of the podcast have been fully transcribed. The finished transcripts that you can see there, some of them have been added to the website already, and they've been proofread and checked and corrected and stuff. Little corrections have been made by me, and then I've published them on the pages for those episodes. But the other ones that haven't been proofread, most of those transcripts are sort of, they're mainly correct. There are some little corrections that I will need to make. I haven't proofread them all, but anyway, there's a lot of stuff there for you to check out. Anyway, let's get down to business and deal with the question of what is Britishness. Right. So let's have a look at some of the stereotypes of the UK from abroad. I know that I have dealt with this a little bit before, so I'm going to sort of try and move through it fairly swiftly. So what did my students come up with after I'd asked them to brainstorm their associations with Britain or Britishness? So I asked them to, you know, think of values, people, any other aspects of the culture. And I'm going to go through that list in a second. So I've included what I heard from students and other people I've met over the years, in fact. So not only in the list I'm about to go through, not only will you find things that my students in France came up with, but also the kind of things that I've heard from students from many, many countries. Typical reference points that people have for the UK. They may be true. They may be stereotypes. Let's have a look. And I know I've talked about some of these things before. And in fact, I've talked about the fact that I've talked about these things before as well. And in fact, right now, I'm pretty sure that, in fact, I'm now talking about the fact that I've talked about things before as well. Anyway, I don't mean to confuse you. Here is the list of things in no particular order. So the first thing is bad food, right? Obviously, Britain's known for its bad food. Okay, all right, maybe that's true. Maybe we spent rather than focusing on our food, maybe we spent more time trying to take over the world and then just we ate your food instead. Maybe that's what it was. Maybe it's something to do with our climate that we don't have such a broad range of traditionally, we didn't have a broad range of ingredients available to us. It's not like living in the Mediterranean where you get, you know, all these very tasty, sun-enriched foods. Up in the north, it's harder to find, you know, such a broad range of food. Maybe it's something to do with the class system, that the upper classes tended to have the good food, and therefore that food is associated with a very sort of expensive and exclusive class. So it's not always obvious. It's not always easy to find English food because it's associated with rich upper class people, and the lower class, more readily available food tends to be sort of slightly lower in standard. I don't know. There are lots of reasons for it. On balance, though, I would say that you've probably got a point if you think that English food is bad in comparison to other foods. I would say it's just harder to find good English food. And in fact, English food is getting better and better all the time. If you go to London, there are loads and loads of great restaurants. So, yeah, I'm not entirely convinced that the stereotype of English, of bad English food, still is valid. Although I understand if you go and get some fish and chips in some chip shop in the middle of a city somewhere, it's likely to be quite greasy and so on. Anyway, I do get a bit annoyed when people just tell me that British food is terrible. It does annoy me a bit because, you know, what are you saying about my mum's cooking? You know what I mean? Like, my mum cooks well. So don't try and tell me that English food is bad. It's just not fair. It's like a generalisation. So fish and chips, okay, fair enough. Yeah, we do eat fish and chips sometimes on Friday. And I love fish and chips, in fact. Jelly. I'm always told by people that, oh, English food is just jelly. Yeah, well, yeah, not just jelly. And we don't eat jelly that much. Tea, of course. Tea. Well, yes, we do love tea. I love tea. But most people drink tea in a certain way. They don't necessarily drink it from one of those old-fashioned, ornate tea sets. It's not a very posh experience, usually. You don't always have to have like a tea set with a cup and saucer. Pass the sugar, dear. No, it's not always like that. You know, often you'll have tea in a mug, a big mug, like mug that you use to drink coffee. We have milk with it and stuff like that. It's more of a sort of, it's less formalized than you might expect. It's much more of an informal thing. Do you fancy a cup of tea? Yeah, lovely. Have you got any biscuits? Nice. Thanks very much. Cheers, that kind of thing. Sit down in the afternoon with a few friends put the kettle on, that kind of thing. So yeah, tea is important, and of course it goes back to our colonial past with India. You know, we colonized India, and India is where all the tea comes from. Sri Lanka and Assam, obviously Sri Lanka is not in India, but anyway, from this region. So that's why we've got tea in our culture, because it comes from the Victorian period when we colonized India. And the colonization of India, well, that's a slightly controversial topic, because obviously it involved, the British Empire did some pretty irresponsible and cruel things in terms of its colonization of India. People wrote down things like this: the Queen, like we worship the Queen. Well, we don't really worship the Queen. In fact, most people are quietly proud of the Queen. Most people like her. I mean, not necessarily as a person. I mean, we don't really know what she's like as a person, because she doesn't express her opinions on many things. But most people are quite happy to have the Queen. But we don't sort of worship her or anything like that. It's more of a sort of fun, kind of light-hearted sort of feeling. And I guess the Queen really represents the nation. So if you're proud of the Queen, it also means you're proud of Britain. So people use the Queen as a symbol of their, you know, comfort and pride in being British. Other things like Hugh Grant and certain movie stars, maybe not Hugh Grant so much anymore. These days we've got other people like Benedict Cumberbatch and stuff like that, these movie stars who seem to be quintessentially British or quintessentially English. What is it about them that's quintessentially English? Something about the kind of eccentricity, something about the clothing style, and maybe the manners and the understated sense of humour, things like that. Britain's known for its bad weather. Basically, the weather is, well, compared to many other parts of the world, the weather seems to be grey and wet and cold, but it's not that sort of horrendous. I mean, it never gets really extreme. It's just reliably grey, let's say. Changeable as well. That's another thing about British weather. It changes a lot. And, you know, we don't get long periods of sunshine. You'll get a bit of sunshine, bit of rain. So it's hard to just rely on the weather, especially in the summertime. The way it normally goes is that the winter is long and cold and wet and a bit depressing because there's not much light. And then spring comes along and you think, ah, finally, hope. Hope enters your heart again. And people start making plans about the summer and they think, oh, I'm looking forward to the summer. It's going to be great. Imagining walking around in shorts and T-shirts and flip-flops and stuff like that. And we continue to dream of the summer all the way into the beginning of June. And, you know, it's raining and not as warm as you expected. And you think, oh, well, it's okay. We've got plenty of time. And then in July, July comes along and it's still grey and still not quite hot enough. And that, in fact, that feeling often continues all the way through the whole summer. And the summer never fully arrives in a satisfying way, except maybe for a couple of weeks of a heat wave where you get, you know, 2 weeks of hot, sunny weather and everyone is out in the park making the most of the sunshine before, you know, September comes in again. You might get an Indian summer. An Indian summer basically is like a late summer. Sometimes late September or even early October, you get a period like maybe a week or two of really nice sunshine and hot weather. That seems to have happened in the last few years. Britain apparently is also known for its drunkenness. We drink a lot, but I have said on the podcast before that it seems that most nations are famous for their drunkenness, aren't they? But certainly the English, we do like a drink. That's true, and we have slightly bad reputation for being messy drunks. And if you go to most UK towns on a Friday or Saturday night at about 12 or 1 a.m., you'll find that the scenes are pretty intense, with people coming out of nightclubs and pubs in various different states of drunkenness. And so certainly, yeah, Friday, Saturday night, there is a bit of a drinking culture, which I have talked about before. Football hooligans is another thing that we may be known for. Slightly less now, although recently there was a story of Chelsea football fans on the French metro system being loud and aggressive and racist as well. They pushed a black French what's the word for someone who's traveling to work? Commuter, that's it. Chelsea fans were on the way to a football game against Paris Saint-Germain, and the Chelsea fans were being rowdy and noisy and racist, and it was very embarrassing for me as an English person. I think, oh, these Chelsea twats. And it's, to be honest, it's not all Chelsea fans. It's just like a small group among the fans who were just being racist and irresponsible. They pushed a black guy, a commuter, off the train, and then they started chanting, "We're racist and we're proud of it." Okay, very bad. I think the guy who was responsible for pushing the guy off the train. Now, he didn't push him off the train while the train was moving. No, the train was in the station and the doors were going to close. And the guy wanted to get in the carriage and the Chelsea fans pushed him out onto the platform. He didn't fall over. He just couldn't get into the train. Anyway, the people responsible, I think, have been arrested by the police because that kind of behaviour that kind of racism and hate, you know, hateful behavior is not really tolerated. So on one hand, we've got, you know, the drunken football hooligan. On the other hand, though, we have the other sort of British stereotype of the gentleman, the polite, formal gentleman who's kind of indirect and well-mannered. So these two aspects, the gentleman, like sort of your Prince Charles or Hugh Grant on one side, and then a football hooligan, you know, maybe embodied by the image of someone like Wayne Rooney, or somewhere in the middle, like Prince Harry, because he kind of combines the best or worst of both worlds, doesn't he, it seems. Our colonial past, as I've mentioned, and the British Empire that used to span the globe. They used to say that the sun never set on the British Empire, which meant that, you know, somewhere around the world, the sun was always shining on the British Empire because our empire went all the way around the world. That has, of course, reduced now, and independence was given back to many nations, and we don't really have an empire anymore. There's the British Commonwealth of Nations, which isn't really a power structure. It's more like a sort of a club. Maybe there are some trade agreements between members of the Commonwealth, but there's not really much power in the Commonwealth per se, not certainly not as much as you would get from trade agreements with Europe. So other stuff, I mean, marmalade is a kind of jam made from oranges that you spread on your toast in the morning, and that seems to be something that people think of when they think of Britain. Also Marmite, I should say. Marmite is also another kind of spread, which it's like a brown, sticky, smelly spread that you put onto toast or other things. And it's actually made of yeast, brewer's yeast, vitamin B. What's yeast? Well, when you're making bread, you've got your flour and sugar and salt and eggs, I think. Are eggs in bread? I don't know. Anyway, you can tell I'm English because I don't know. I don't know how to cook these things. But anyway, bread, the normal ingredients. There's one special ingredient that you must include in bread that will help it to rise in the oven, and that's yeast, okay? Marmite is basically it's basically yeast in a sort of black, thick, sticky, smelly spread. And the thing about Marmite, the thing that everyone knows about Marmite is that you either love it or hate it. Okay, you love it or you hate it. So Marmite is synonymous with dividing people in two categories. You either love it or hate it, okay? What do I think of Marmite? I like it. I'm not in one of those categories. I don't hate it, but I don't love it either. I will eat it. To be honest, I think I would be in the I love it category because we used to have Marmite at home. And Marmite reminds me of my childhood eating toast with my dad, because my dad would have a bit of Marmite on toast. So it reminds me of eating toast or maybe eating boiled eggs with toast with my dad. It's the sort of thing that my dad would prepare. If my mum was out doing something, my dad would prepare eggs on toast with some Marmite. So yeah, I do love Marmite. Other people other people in my classes wrote Margaret Thatcher as one of the people that they think of when they think of the UK. And of course, Margaret Thatcher was the Prime Minister of the UK from 1979 to 1990. And she's a very significant figure in modern British life because she quite radically changed the country. I mean, she changed the economy, turning it into a liberalized kind of American style free market economy, and she closed a lot of national industries like the coal mines, for example. She battled with the trade unions and ultimately kind of managed to break the trade union movement in the UK, and really sort of to an extent her premiership, her period as the Prime Minister, really kind of killed off the socialist movement in the UK. And since then, really, the UK's always been sort of centre-right in terms of its politics. We did have the Labour Party. They came back with Tony Blair as the new Labour Party, but they weren't really a socialist party like we had before Thatcher. So really, the socialist movement was kind of ended to an extent, or certainly limited by what Thatcher did with our economy. So Margaret Thatcher was a very divisive person as well. I mean, we had Marmite. Either you love it or you hate it. And we also have Margaret Thatcher. She's like Marmite as well, because either you love her or you hate her, it seems. She was divisive. That is the word that we think of when... That's really the word that was used in the newspapers when Margaret Thatcher died. It's the defining word for Margaret Thatcher. She divided the nation into people who supported her and people who quite passionately hated her. And when Margaret Thatcher died just a couple of years ago, I wonder if you know, do you know what the most downloaded song on the iTunes store in the UK was when Margaret Thatcher died? What was the song that everyone was downloading when Thatcher died? Do you know? Well, the song was called Ding Dong, The Witch Is Dead. And it's a song from the movie The Wizard of Oz. In The Wizard of Oz, you know the Wizard of Oz, don't you? There are a couple of witches in that film, and they're evil. And when one of the witches dies, a lot of the characters run around dancing and singing a song of joy, which goes, "Ding dong, the witch is dead." I wonder if I can play it to you. Okay, I've found it. Okay, basically, ding dong, the witch is dead, the wicked witch is dead, which makes you think. It makes you think, doesn't it? Like, really, people hated Thatcher so much that they wanted to celebrate her death by downloading that song. Yep, that's right. That's true. So not everyone hated her. Some people thought she was great and they really agreed with what she managed to do to the economy, and she brought the country out of recession and allowed people to be proud and stuff like that. Other people really hated her because she sort of destroyed many communities that were based around various industries that she closed. So these were industries like the coal mines and so on. We had communities in Wales, in the north of England, and in Scotland, and so on, that relied on these industries. And when she closed those industries down in order to save money and import a lot of commodities, all these communities lost jobs, and the communities sort of died as a result. She killed these communities off, and that's why many people really strongly hate her. There are other reasons too. The Falklands War. She took the country to war to protect the Falklands, which is, again, another controversial issue. If you're in Argentina, you might have fairly strong views on that too. I'm not going to say really either way. You know where I stand on war. I mean, it's a complex thing. Anyway, Thatcher, certainly a very important person in British life. Other stuff that my students have mentioned, and I'm quite proud of this bit. That was the people wrote things like The Beatles, The Clash, The Arctic Monkeys, underground British music, and so on. So yes, British music. And I'm very proud of the fact that Britain has produced lots of really vibrant music over the years. And it's something that, we value a lot in our culture. Our music, and of all the things that Britain has done, I think maybe the music is the thing that I'm most proud of, and it's the thing that I can feel comfortable to be proud of. British films, various British films over the years, not just the gritty Brit flicks, but also the more serious interesting British movies that we've had. And to be honest, if I started talking about British films, I'd need to do a whole podcast about it. And I've been meaning to do that for some time. I think you'll agree. Yes. Our relationship with America, I think Thatcher said that we had a special relationship with the US, which probably annoys everyone else in the world, certainly in Europe. They look at Britain and America being all friendly with each other, George Bush and Tony Blair, you know, and their friendship. And it probably sickens the rest of the world a little bit, especially when you consider that Britain and the US, when they've got together as friends, it often means that they're, you know, intervening in some other region of the world, maybe, you know, in the Middle East or something like that. So, yeah, there is a connection to the US as well. I mean, it's not always friendly. There's a bit of conflict between the US and the UK as well. They say that they're two countries separated by a common language. So despite the fact that the US and the UK have the same language, it's a slightly different version of the language, and those slight differences do divide us. So although we've got like a kind of political relationship and we share the same language, it doesn't necessarily mean that we are the best of friends. Anyway, there is a certain relationship with the US, which I have gone into before in the podcast. Moving forwards, literature. People mention things like Shakespeare and Dickens. Sherlock Holmes is an image that people think of when they consider the UK. And I must do an episode again about Sherlock Holmes. I did do I've mentioned Sherlock several times before on the podcast, and I'd like to talk about the TV show, because I love the TV show Sherlock, you know, the one with Benedict Cumberbatch. I think it's one of the best things on TV, and I can't wait for the new episodes to arrive, whenever they are going to arrive. I just can't wait. For me, new episodes of Sherlock are like an event. And it's, you know, I want to stop everything just so I can watch it. I love the new TV remake of Sherlock with Benedict Cumberbatch. I think it was Caitlin Moran, the comedian, who said that Benedict Cumberbatch may be the only person ever to play Sherlock Holmes who has a name which is even more ridiculous than Sherlock Holmes. Which is true, isn't it, when you think about it? Benedict Cumberbatch, what a name. And Sherlock Holmes, what a name too. I will have to leave that subject for now and come back to it. So what else? Confusing differences. People are always confused between the UK, Britain, England, Scotland, Wales, Northern Ireland, Ireland, the Republic of Ireland, the British Isles, and stuff like that. Let me try and clarify it for you once and for all. England, Scotland, Wales, and Northern Ireland, they are four countries. Those four countries together are united, and that's one nation, one state called the United Kingdom. Okay, so the United Kingdom is made up of four countries: England, Scotland, Wales, and Northern Ireland. England's the biggest country of the four, then Scotland, then Wales, I think, and then Northern Ireland. All right, now Britain refers to the geographical island. It's a geographical word, Britain, and it refers to the landmass that includes England, Scotland, and Wales. That's Britain. And Northern Ireland, geographically, is actually part of Ireland, part of that landmass. But there is a border up there in the north, the sort of northeast part, formerly, well, it's also called Ulster. I think I'm being correct here. That county was actually divided from the rest of Ireland and is part of the United Kingdom. Okay, so Northern Ireland is actually part of the geographical landmass of Ireland, but in fact, politically, it's part of the United Kingdom. The rest of that landmass is known as the Republic of Ireland, which, you know, as the name suggests, and as you know, is a republic completely independent from the UK, a member of the European Union, and so on. All right, the British Isles is a term that's used to describe all of the islands in that area, including Britain and various other islands, including the Isle of Wight and the Isle of Man and the Scilly Isles and Orkney and so on. There are others. I think technically Ireland is considered to be part of the British Isles, although I'm sure that there are plenty of people in Ireland who don't really like that definition. But I think the British Isles, again, it's just a geographical name to refer to all of the little islands in that whole area. Okay, so other things that people have mentioned to me in my classes are stuff like our strange British humour. So it seems that a lot of people, when they say, oh, this must be British humour, what they mean by that is this is humour that I don't understand. So for many people abroad, it seems that British humour is synonymous with strange humour that's not funny or bizarre humour. And I suppose it's true, we do have a slightly surreal, abstract sense of humour. But we've got, you know, I think we've got quite a refined sense of humour, and it's quite cerebral, it's quite intelligent. Although, I mean, if you look at Mr. Bean, it's not that intelligent. But to be honest, Mr. Bean is only something that people internationally think of as British humour. In the UK, we're not really that into Mr. Bean these days. In fact, Mr. Bean hasn't been on TV since like the 90s. And if you ask British people what they consider to be great British comedy, then they probably won't say Mr. Bean. They'll say other things. I mean, there are new comedy shows coming out all the time, and Mr. Bean is something that we've mainly forgotten about. He was in the Olympic ceremony, but you know why? It's because the rest of the world, you know, needed to see Mr. Bean in the Olympic ceremony. On balance, I think Mr. Bean is pretty funny. It's pretty good. He's a good silent. Rowan Atkinson is a good silent comedian, and he's very good at mime, and his facial expressions and his body language is funny. But it's not the most complex humour out there, is it? You know me. I love Monty Python, but since then there have been loads and loads of other shows. And I do plan to continue talking about British humour and British comedy on the podcast. I've done episodes about British comedy before, and I do plan to do more. British comedy and British humour, they're different things. For me, comedy is about entertainment, shows on TV, and theatre performances, stand-up comedy and so on. And British humour just refers to the way in which we use humour in our everyday lives. And so, yeah, British humour is quite unique, I suppose. Not that, to be honest, you can't say quite unique. I'd say it is unique. Because either things are unique or not, right? Well, anyway, British humour is unique, really, and it involves certain specific things like sarcasm and taking the piss out of each other, taking the mickey out of each other and stuff like that. In the UK, we don't have a monopoly on sarcasm or irony, but the main thing is that we value our humour a lot, and it's almost like there's always a place for humour. There's always a time for humour. It's not that there's... In some cultures, there is a specific time and a place for humour. Like you'd say, okay, now we will have half an hour of humour. No, in England, in the UK, any time's an appropriate time for a joke, really. Although, you know, don't take that as a green light to just make a joke whenever you want. But you might find that humour is something that you will... If you're in the UK, you might find that people are joking a lot in any situation, in a hospital or whatever. But you've got to be careful with that. There's a way to joke. Often jokes are made in a very understated way. Like, you know, you say it with a very serious voice, with a straight face, and it's sarcasm. And often it's hard to identify when someone is being sarcastic or not. Anyway, I will have to come back to the subject of British humour. That's not the main focus of this episode. So the list goes on, the list of things that my students noted, or that students in the past have noticed, in fact. The list goes on. I'd like to just remind you at this moment of two things. One of them is that I'd like you to add your comments in the comments section of this episode, and tell me what your associations are of the UK. Tell me what your associations are. What are the standard things that people think about Britain in your country? Are they like well-informed stereotypes? Are they real, or are they just, you know, cliches? Don't worry, I'm not going to judge you harshly. I'm just interested in having your input regarding what the commonly held images of the UK are in your country. And do write comments on the website, because it's a good way for you to interact with me and each other. And it's also a little opportunity for you to practice producing some English. So that's the first thing I want to remind you about at this point. The other thing I want to remind you about is that Audible offer, audible.com. They sell audiobooks. Normally audiobooks there cost like, you know, £10, £15 or something like that. Now audible.com would like to offer you, my listeners, a free 30-day membership trial, which includes a free download of any audiobook that you want. So if you haven't already taken advantage of this offer, then I'd like to suggest that you do so. Just go to audibletrial.com/teacherluke, and there you can register and get your free audiobook. Now, don't worry about this. You will notice that when you register, they ask for you to become a member, and you will give them your card details. Don't worry, because Audible is a very reliable service. They're part of Amazon's network, so they're very trusted. And you can just cancel your membership whenever you want. After 30 days, if you haven't cancelled, then they will charge you $15 as a normal member. And that will include a free audiobook download every month. But if you want, you can just sign up, download your first free audiobook. And then if you don't like the service, you can just cancel it. And you can keep the audiobook and everything's cool. Now, if you want all of the details, go to teacherluke.co.uk/audible, okay, and that will give you all of the details. Okay, right, that's it. That's my plug for Audible done. What time is it? We've been doing this for about 45 minutes. How are you? Are you all right? Are you keeping up with this? There's a lot more to come in this episode. I hope that you're finding this interesting. I hope that you're thinking about, you know, what maybe you're thinking about your own national identity at this point. I'm very curious to know about, I mean, I'd love to hear from you telling me about your countries in the same way that I'm telling you about my country, you know, I do encourage you to do that. Just leave a few sentences as comments on the website. Just share your thoughts and stuff like that. Now, let's carry on with this episode. So we've seen how foreign people may define Britishness. But what about British people? How do British people define Britishness? Well, for me, when you ask the average British person to define Britishness, I find that they always give certain stock answers, typical answers to this question too. So you've got your typical answers from foreigners and typical answers from British people as well. As we know, it's very hard to truly define the concept of Britishness. So what happens is you end up listing various associations which don't fully deal with the whole subject in a satisfyingly complete way. But nevertheless, let's have a look at that. You know what I'm going to do here? I think I'm going to stop this episode. And I think this feels like a good point to end this episode now. And we'll come back to this subject in part two, which you should be able to get either immediately, or you might need to wait a couple of days. But anyway, I think I'm going to first of all try and speak my own language, and then I think I'm going to draw this episode to a close at this point. It's normal. Well, is it normal? It's sort of becoming normal for me to sing a song to you at the end of an episode. So as I usually say at this point, if you don't like music and you don't like to hear me sing, now's the time to stop listening. And if you do stop now, what you will miss is me singing a song and then saying goodbye. All right. But if you like to hear a bit of music and a bit of singing, then stick around, because I will sing a tune to you. I think I'm going to pick something that somehow is British, something quintessentially British or English. You know, I'm English, so I think I can do that. So stick around if you want to hear a song. Otherwise, I'll catch up with you in the next episode. For now, it's time to just say goodbye. Bye. 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 Okay, then. So before the closing jingle from this song, from this episode. I'm going to try and do a song. And I've actually got the guitar this time, not the ukulele, because the song I want to sing to you is it's just too hard to play on a ukulele. So I need the full six strings of a guitar. And so this song is by the Kinks. I wonder if you know them. Do you know the Kinks? They were a big group in the 1960s. The lead singer was called Ray Davis, and he also wrote most of the songs. What can I tell you about the Kinks? Well, for me, this song sums up a lot of my feelings about British life, particularly English life. And the song's called Autumn Almanac. So it's by the Kinks, written in 1967. Ray Davis, the songwriter, was known for writing songs that had a particularly English sensibility. So this one is called Autumn Almanac. What's an almanac, you might think? So an almanac is really a handbook which contains lots of information of general interest. And in this case, it's an autumn almanac. So really, this song is about Ray Davis trying to describe or summarize the feeling of autumn in England and all of the associations that that brings. And for me, it's very evocative of a feeling in British life. It describes various aspects of, let's say, English life, because I think it's more specific than just British. It describes various aspects of English life. Imagine a picture book of images. Gardening, the weather, the end of summer, the approaching winter, escaping, British people escaping from the lack of sun by staying indoors and drinking tea and eating buttered currant buns. The atmosphere of a pub on a Friday evening, football on Saturdays, a roast lunch on Sundays. It has a kind of nostalgic feeling to it, this song, and a slight sense of sadness along with the national pride. Maybe a sense of, as well as being proud of the community that Ray Davis is singing about in this song, he also feels like it's holding him back and that he'll never be able to escape it. So it's a weird mix of like pride and sadness and nostalgia. There's also that sense that maybe this version of England that he's singing about is slowly disappearing as the country modernizes more and more, and perhaps the values and habits are going to be lost at some point in the future, which I think is something that people often feel whenever they, whenever they think about their country. There's always that sense of things are changing, we're losing these traditional values. I think that's quite a common feeling. Anyway, the song is called Autumn Almanac, and I'm going to try and play and sing it for you now. It's actually a deceptively complex song, but I'm not going to make excuses for myself. I'm just going to try and play it. Here it is. Okay, so I've just tried to record this song, and I tried again and again and again. It took me probably about 20 attempts, and the final version, I just listened back to it, and no, okay? No, I'm not going to put it on the podcast. Why? Because it's piss poor, it's rubbish, it's not good enough, and I don't do the song justice, and I wouldn't. It wouldn't be good for you, for your ears, and just generally the world will be a better place if you don't hear my version of that song. But I do still love the song, and rather than just putting it on the episode here, which I try not to do too much, I try not to put other people's work into my stuff too much, and I'm kind of drawing the line with this song for some reason. If you want to hear it, then you can obviously go to teacherluke.co.uk. And there I will embed a YouTube video of that song. So you can do that if you like, and then you can actually hear it. My pride has got in the way, and I'm not willing to let you hear my, frankly, bad version of this classic song. I think it's actually an incredibly complex song when you look at the chords. And I'm going to leave the chords and the lyrics on the website underneath the video. When you look at the chords, you'll notice it gets pretty complicated, and also it's very melodic, and my voice isn't good enough, and I'm going to stop making excuses now. All I will say is just go to teacherluke.co.uk and you'll see the video for the song that I'm talking about. That's the end of part one of this episode, but in part two, I am going to deal with the whole idea of Britishness from the point of view of Britain. So what do British people... how do British people define Britishness? And we'll be looking at all kinds of other interesting stuff. So stay tuned for that one. But for now, it's time for me to say goodbye, and I'm going to do it again now. Here it is. Goodbye. Bye. 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 Thanks again for listening to Luke's English podcast. For more information, visit teacherluke.co.uk.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
If you enjoyed this episode of Luke's English Podcast, consider signing up for Luke's English Podcast Premium. You'll get regular premium episodes with stories, vocabulary, grammar, and pronunciation teaching from me, and the usual moments of humour and fun. Plus, with your subscription, you will be directly supporting my work and making this whole podcast project possible. For more information about Luke's English Podcast Premium, go to teacherluke.co.uk/premium info.